Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And welcome back to the House of Pod. I'm Dr. Kaveh Hoda. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm a gastroenterologist, and I'll be your host for this little podcast that looks at the intersections of public health, pop culture, equity, and whatever else seems interesting to me. Before we go any further, I'd like to thank and introduce our brand new sponsors. This episode of the House of Pod is being brought to you by Ben & Jerry's new medical-themed ice cream flavors, featuring Lemon Lyme Disease, Acute Leukemia, and Methicillin-Resistant Staphylo-Chocolate Oreos. Taste the pathology. Today, we're talking about Andrew Huberman. And I wanted to talk about him, but I also wanted to use it as sort of a launching pad to talk about doctors with podcasts, scientists with podcasts, doctors/scientists with podcasts who promote supplements, and to help me do that, I have two guests. First, and I say this without the slightest bit of exaggeration, is the greatest person to ever exist. Rebecca Watson, writer, science communicator, surfer, YouTuber, friend. Perhaps the most important thing, friend. Rebecca, how are you?
Javi, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me back on. It's been a long time, actually, because I realized in the months since you last had me on, you've added jokes to your podcast.
What do you mean?
Which is
strange thing to say. Probably gonna have to edit that out. Rebecca, what do you know about Andrew Huberman?
Well, up until a few months ago, I knew I had never even heard his name, and then I saw a bunch of people on Blue Sky, which is like Twitter with fewer Nazis, joking about an unnamed famous science podcaster and how awful he was. And I had to say, who are you talking about? And someone responded with like rhymes with Booberman or something. And I said, I still do not know what you are saying. So
why
I got a helpful...
Why wouldn't they say his name? Know. Like it would speak
like
him
Voldemort.
Into existence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Beetlejuice. He'll just appear behind you.
If you say it three times, he shows up and forces you to give up coffee. Like, so yeah, I had to get a DM from someone explaining who he was. And I looked him up and I was like, oh, he's extremely famous. He's like Joe Rogan with, but less bro-y. I don't know. So
yeah.
I'm so glad I had that experience on Blue Sky because it prepared me for the previous 2 weeks of nonstop Hubergasm. I feel like every...
That's the title of this episode, is going to be Hubergasm.
Hubergasm. It's been just nonstop. I feel like every couple of days there's some new revelation, a new juicy thing to read, and I'm here for it, honestly.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. I'd sort of peripherally known about him for a while. People had sent me things like, what do you think about this guy? And I would take like a look at small clips, and I was like, I didn't see anything too egregious in the things they sent, but there was always some kind of off about it, and I didn't really delve into it too deeply. He is extraordinarily famous. Like, and he is like I looked it up. He has the eighth most popular podcast, like globally. So he's not far behind Joe Rogan when it comes to that sort of thing, but he actually has maybe a little more impact on certain medical things. So joining us to discuss that, Rebecca, and maybe delve into a little bit about this Huberman, we have Dr. Andrea Love, not to be confused with Dr. Malachi Love, the teenage boy who pretended he was a doctor. So if you want to hear more about that, I just did an episode Behind the Bastards about that. That was really fun. But no, not that one. This is a different Dr. Love. She is a PhD immunologist, microbiologist, cat mom, science communicator. And Dr. Love, you recently wrote an article in Slate about Andrew Huberman. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Can I call you Andrea?
You can. Yes, I preferred. unless that pronunciation is bothering you today.
Andrea. I think I nailed it, right?
Definitely.
Fantastic.
That's it.
So let me start by introducing him a little bit to our listeners who may not know who he is. So he was born in 1975 in Stanford at the Stanford Hospital in Palo Alto to an Argentinian physicist father and a mother who was a children's book author and a professor at Stanford. He was pretty involved in athletics when he was young, and he, I think, considered a career in firefighting from what I read, and into skateboarding and kind of an active young man, but he ended up veering towards the sciences. He went into a biopsychology, and he went to a community college here in Los Altos in the Bay Area called Foothill. He got a BA in psychology at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and then he went on to UC Berkeley, my alma mater. He got an MA in psychology, and then he transferred to UC Davis, where he completed a PhD in neuroscience in 2004. He became a postdoctoral fellow at Stanford, and so his area of research seems to be the visual system, how it affects the brain, etc., the interaction with vision in the brain. And he currently holds the title of Associate Professor of Neurobiology and Ophthalmology at the Stanford University School of Medicine. And since 2021, he's hosted this very, very popular podcast I mentioned called The Huberman Lab. So despite this popularity, he has faced some criticism, which we're going to talk about. Let me start by asking you, Andrea, when did you start paying attention to him, and why did you start paying attention to him?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've always, you know, my whole kind of scientific career, I've really been immersed in wellness misinformation. So I was chuckling at your Ben and Jerry's ice cream flavor because my doctoral research was in the immunology of Lyme disease. And Lyme disease is a realm that is just filled with misinformation, and the wellness industry really exploits that. And so I've always kind of had my ear to the ground about a lot of trends or things that are happening in the pseudoscience space. And I've been, I was actually, you know, co-host of a science podcast for about 4 years. I actually recently left that. That's a whole other story.
Let's get into it. Are you mad at them?
I smell drama.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, I was just, I was not.
Yeah, I love not, this.
Yeah, she looks so uncomfortable.
This is
I love
so
it.
Much fun for us.
It ended up being a situation where I was taken advantage of for my intellectual property and not compensated appropriately. So
okay. We have so much to talk about offline.
Yeah,
actually,
it's gonna be. It'll be good. So, but in that sphere, and that was really born out of the fact that I had started dissecting just kind of fear-laden headlines early in the COVID pandemic, like even before the US shut down in March, because I remember I was working in New York City on the day that they declared the public health emergency and all that. But I had been talking on my own personal pages about a lot of the headlines people were seeing, like there were claims that it was sexually transmitted because it was, you know, virus was found in the semen samples of intensive care patients. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't mean that it's actually transmitted. It means these people are just laden with virus. And so you're going to find it if you look for it, you know? So just trying to like quell people's fears about that. And then, you know, I'd gotten approached by a former college classmate, and that's kind of where our podcast started, but it was really geared towards addressing these types of you know, pseudoscience misinformation in areas that I've worked in my whole career. So genetic technologies, genetic engineering, really anything related to the immune system. So a lot of anti-vaccine rhetoric I've been bombarded with my whole life. You know, a lot of things about GMOs being harmful and really anything that's tangentially related to inflammation or microbiome or all these buzzwords now. And so there's a convergence with like my field of expertise and the world that I work in as a scientist and a lot of the predatory practices that, you know, you see kind of coming out of the wellness industry. And so, you know, people started sending me his content more and more frequently. It wasn't like I was actively seeking it out. And, you know, there was a couple of episodes, the one about, you know, sugar and your health, where he had Robert Lustig, that one really kind of piqued my interest because it was, you know, just, you know, a litany of, you know, common tropes that are fear-mongering and vilifying individual food ingredients and just a basic lack of general biochemistry. And then, you know, so I started to kind of poke around some of the earlier things, and you notice that even the guests that he's having on that are being purported as experts in their field are the contrarians, right? Like he had Sarah Gottfried on, and it was all positioned about, you know, women's hormones and your health. And she's notorious for making claims that you can cure your hormones with diet. And that is obviously, you know, the minority in the sphere of women's science, women's reproductive health. But then it really got bad when he came out with this cold and flu episode, which was shortly after the Robert Lustig episode. And that's my wheelhouse. So it was really easy for me to just even listen, you know, in, you know, having it on the background, because you have to, because they're 2 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours long. I mean, it's, you know, it's the Rush Limbaugh strategy, right? You have to kind of have it on repeat in the background all the time. And then your brain just starts to like absorb his voice. But anyway, so the cold and flu episode was just, you know, so egregiously wrong from everything from the basic biology to the public health recommendations. And then of course, he had this almost hour long segment on all of these, you know, hacks and the ways to protect yourself and the ways to prevent respiratory illnesses. And it's obviously, you know, promoting all of the things that he's sponsored by. And so, you know, it's really, when you kind of look at it in its entirety, it's quite obvious that, you know, the messaging he's putting out is kind of being presented under the guise of science, but there's actually no evidence behind it. And the problem is that no one has the time to go fact check 4 hours of content every single week. I mean, I have a full-time job and I was doing it at nights on the weekends, doing it in chunks, because, you know, I want to also pull the studies that he's referencing, some of which he links on his page, most of which he doesn't. So then you have to kind of look them up yourself and kind of figure out what he's referring to by the, you know, the phrases that he's using. And then, you know, kind of put together the actual dissection, which I did initially for the cold and flu on my own, you know, newsletter. And I split it up into four chunks because I had written, I don't know, 12,000, 15,000 words, you know, of just kind of breaking apart that single episode.
It is the Brandolini's law, or the bullshit asymmetry principle, which says that the amount of energy needed to refute bullshit is an order of magnitude more than that needed to produce it.
So much more. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even, you know, I mean, you know, he obviously made a lot of hyperbolic statements with regard to exercise. And, you know, it's kind of shocking that someone who's such a gym bro, like, couldn't even get the basics about how the immune system interplays with exercise. But I mean, like, some of this shit was just, can I say shit on here?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Right,
we demand it of our guests.
Okay, perfect. Okay. You know, because I heard that swearing makes, you know, intelligent people swear more.
Exactly.
So yeah. So that's my thing. But the basic shit that, like, maybe not even immunology 101, biology 101, right? Anybody that paid attention during the pandemic, right? He said antibodies are made by stem cells in the bone marrow, and then they go back to the bone marrow and they make better antibodies. If you've listened to the news when anybody was talking about COVID vaccines in the last 4 years, I feel like anybody would get that quiz right. What cell type make antibodies? B cells. Like, you don't know anything else about immunology. You don't know how they do it. You don't know what they're doing with it. But they say it so much on repeat on all of these, you know, any outlet that's talking about the benefits of vaccination, B cells. We're like, you know, he just like lost the whole like hematopoietic lineage, you know, pathway and just started from the beginning where all the stem cells just start in the bone marrow and then what, they just stay there and they're just making antibodies in there. It was absurd. Yeah.
Has he ever, to your knowledge, addressed any mistakes he's made like that online?
So interesting you say that, because that episode, I went to his YouTube because obviously I was pulling sources and I wanted to, you know, verify my listening, and I, you know, pull up the closed captioning because I have ADHD and I like to read as I'm listening. It helps me process information.
Mm-hmm. It's what young people do. It's how young people watch.
Are you calling me young?
I'm calling myself young. I'm saying I know this because I'm a young person. I'm hip and I'm cool and I'm young and I watch things with subtitles.
I'm a geriatric millennial. Like that's my official term. So.
I'm a cusper. I might be an infantile Gen Xer. I'm not sure. I'm not
definitely infantile.
Fits me better. Yeah. Sorry. Go on.
Yeah.
No, that's fine. So I went to in that particular episode, right? And on his YouTube for that, he goes, I have to make a correction. I said a micron was 1/1000th of a centimeter, whereas it's 1/10000th of a centimeter. So I found that interesting.
That's a very smart thing to do because it's like saying on one hand, yeah, I'm willing to admit when I make mistakes.
Yes.
But the mistake I made is so infinitely like
and also irrelevant to any of what he was saying. But it gets better because I was not involved in the conversation on his Instagram page. So I'm sure you know that like when he launches his episodes, they go up on YouTube, they go up on his website, but he also does like little preview, you know, pictures,
little snippets and stuff.
Yeah. And little Instagram. Short video clips.
Yeah.
So on the little, you know, the post, cause this was a solo episode. It was, it was, you know, it was basically, you know, the cold and flu one. Right. And it was a picture of him and it was like, you know, how to prevent cold and flus or whatever. And on that thread, someone had tagged me, like a follower, you know, someone who just, you know, happened to follow his social page, because I don't follow his social pages. And they tagged me and they said, the immunologist, Dr. Andrea Love, has posted recently debunking many of the assertions made in this episode. Touching your eyes, for example, is not a common mechanism. And what he's referring to there is that Huberman went on this really weird tangent about how self-inoculation through the eyeballs was how most people got the flu. It wasn't respiratory or droplet transmission.
Yeah, seems strong.
That's quite a claim.
Seems like a strong claim to make.
Yeah. But it gets better because he responded to that comment and he said he responded to the guy. So he re-tagged him. He ignored my name and he said, considering that I consulted with 3 different MDs in preparation for the episode, including one who works in the emergency room with people who have the flu, I think I'm going to stay with the material in the episode.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you're only one person and he has 3 people and 3 is a larger number than
and
one.
And Andrew, they were probably one. Men. So it's like 6 people if we're
totally
doing the
absolutely.
Math.
That's true.
Absolutely.
It is funny because, you know, I'm a doctor. However, I will be the first to say that when it comes to matters of immunology, immunoscience, I would not consider myself an expert, nor would I consider an ER doctor necessarily to be an expert. We're very good at what we do, our things, but I don't think that's necessary. I'm not saying that the ER doctors can't also be that and a GI doctor couldn't also do those things, but that's not necessarily an automatic thing you can assume. We, as you know, doctors, oftentimes we look for the people who know the most, and sometimes that's another doctor, sometimes that's a scientist of another sort. So, I mean, to stop the argument by saying he spoke to 3 doctors doesn't mean that much to me in and of itself.
Well, it's an argument from authority.
Yes, you know. That's exactly right. And it's well, you know, this immunologist doesn't know what she's talking about because I talked to someone who has people come into the emergency department with symptoms of the flu. Therefore, he is an expert in transmission of virus and how your body develops immune responses to it.
Yeah. You know, even if he had said, I consulted 3 immunologists, still
it
doesn't
still,
answer.
Right. Because I wasn't saying this is my opinion. I was saying the American Academy, you know, American Associated Immunologists. literally basic immunology 101, every immunology textbook on the planet, every immunology peer review publication, every review paper says these things. Stem cells are not making antibodies in your bone marrow, you know? And you know, of course he uses that. I mean, the appeal to authority is a common theme of his, right? You know, I mean, you listen to his episodes and it's every commercial break. Well, I'm at my lab at Stanford, you know, I'm a professor of ophthalmology at Stanford. It's like, yeah. So now people are like, oh my God, Stanford. I remember that being, you know, slung around as it's something to aspire to. Oh, yeah. Stanford, it's a fancy school, you know, and therefore Stanford, it means everything.
Stanford took a little bit of a hit during COVID in regards to its name and that its rep.
But
on the
Huberman is a gold star Stanford because his dad or mom was a professor there, and also he was born there, literally.
So he's
born
a nepo. Is he a nepo baby?
You know,
yeah, he's literally never left the Stanford campus his entire life. Actually,
although apparently he lives in like Southern California.
Opened up a little. They
Malibu.
They
he's
up
got
a
satellite lab in his house. Yeah. I'm watching Narcos Mexico right now, and we're at the point where El Chapo is building his tunnel. So
yeah, that's what he's got going on. Sure. Elon Musk would be helping him with that. So one of the things that you mentioned that's kind of interesting is this air of authority, and he certainly has that. So I have been listening a little bit, and I've been checking out some of his stuff. I'll firstly admit that I think he's very good at what he does. I mean, it's hard to argue. It's hard to like do 2-hour episodes. I mean, he does it. I mean, there's like, you have to like give Trump credit for like just speaking for like 3 hours. He's not saying much, but like you gotta give him credit for the ability to do that. I will do the same here. And not everything he says seems terrible. Some of the stuff he says makes a lot of sense. We'll talk about like sleep, some really basic stuff about sleep. You'll talk about like breathing exercises, stuff where I'm like, okay, this all seems pretty reasonable. But then it does seem to cross a line where, but let me ask you this. There's going to be people out there who are like, hey, I think he helps me. I think it's making my life better. I feel healthier because of it. What is the harm, inherent harm of someone like Huberman who might be pushing pseudoscience or soft science or some of these studies, which we'll talk about in a second? What's the harm of it?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, this is kind of the insidious nature of it, right? He uses a lot of widely held generalizations or things that are widely believed to be true that are essentially considered fundamental, right? Sleep is important for a lot of things, right? You know, I've talked about that a lot in terms of like, you know, all the claims related to boosting your immune system, right? You need sleep to initiate all these wound healing processes and allow your immune cells to regenerate. We know that, you know, getting exercise is good and that what that means for different people is going to be different. We know that, you know, diverse diet is important. And we know that, you know, a lot of various preventive health activities are important. We also know that, you know, sun exposure, ultraviolet radiation is the number one way that we synthesize vitamin D. And there's kind of this dose window, right? A little bit is good. Too much is, you know, puts you at risk for skin cancer. But the thing is that he'll kind of insert those and people will be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like he's telling it to me in this voice that's very soothing to my ears. And, you know, I have this, I feel like I have this emotional connection. And so then it's a lot harder for them to see the red flags. And that's a tactic of pseudoscience, right? They use grains of truth, or they use, you know, nuggets that are widely held to be true. And then they get buy-in from the listener, from the reader, and they create that emotional connection, which very often is one-sided. But the listeners feel like they have a connection to him. And so now they're going to be much more likely to buy into other things he says, right? So yeah, I think sleep is great. And I wish I was better at sleeping, and I'm working on it. But then he ropes them in into things that don't have evidence while also dissuading them from things that do have evidence that are beneficial. And you know, this was an interesting, the cold and flu episode was a really interesting thing because he really actively undermined public health in a big scope where he went on this spiel about how he doesn't personally get the flu vaccine because it's not that effective and the flu's no big deal. And he really likened it to like a cold. And of course he, you know, said, right. He went on this weird thing about how rhinoviruses and rhinos have horns and, you know, just kind of botching Latin, but of course not, not mentioning, you know, all the other viruses that cause respiratory illness and really minimizing the severity of influenza viruses as a public health risk, but also minimizing the benefit of the flu vaccine. He said that, you know, there's all these other flu viruses out there. And if you get infected with one that isn't in the vaccine, it's completely useless, which is false. It completely negates the concept of a polyclonal immune response. He didn't talk about the fact that when he was saying efficacy, he said, you know, 40 to 60% effectiveness, that's relating to outright all cases of symptomatic illness. It's not talking about hospitalizations. It's not talking about deaths. It's not talking about complications after the fact. You know, we've heard a lot about long COVID, which is post-acute sequelae of acute illness. This is not unique to COVID. This happens with a lot of infectious diseases, and it's just very bizarre that people just didn't pay attention to it now. But that can happen after the flu, right? And if you're high risk and the vaccine reduces your viral load because you have some neutralizing antibodies so that you get a lower dose, that could be the line between you dying and you surviving, or you being able to manage illness at home or having to go to the hospital. And of course, he doesn't mention any of that. He doesn't mention the thousands of people that die every year from the flu. And he didn't outright tell his listeners, don't get the flu shot, but these people idolize him. He's saying it's no big deal. I don't get it. This is why I don't get it, because he's not in places where he would be exposed. We know that he's not living in a cave. He goes to the gym and works out with RFK Jr. You know, I mean, he's out there. He's doing appearances.
That's happened?
Yeah. I spoke with one of the women that was in the New York Mag article. She reached out to me a few months back when I started dissecting. And she's, you know, she's given me photo evidence of them. And she, you know, they used to have dinner parties together. They're friends. RFK right. Jr. was trying to get him to publicly endorse him for president, and Huberman kind of, you know, walked that back a little bit because he doesn't want to ostracize some of his listeners, presumably. Right. And that's why he's always very private about, you know, his personal life until now.
That's very interesting, because I do feel like we've seen the rise of medical contrarians. I mean, they've always been there, but they've grown in prominence, it feels like, since COVID. And he toes the line in some ways better than a lot of them, which might make him more dangerous, I guess.
Yeah.
But I have two questions I was going to ask, and this is for both you and Rebecca. The first one's for you, which is, it sounds like he believes the stuff then. He's not, if he's hanging out with RFK and he's doing that, he believes, he's not just trying to be contrarian for contrarian's sake necessarily then.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's, you know, I don't know him personally. It's hard to know, right? But I would say from the information that I've received personally from first person sources about his, you know, behavior. Yeah. And the thing is he has this whole, you know, explanation for why he doesn't get the flu vaccine. And so, you know, you've got what, 5 million people listening to this episode. So, you know, now they're like, well, if he doesn't get it and he's a scientist and he knows science, then like, why the hell should I get it? You know? So now, instead of trying to increase the proportion of the population that get the flu shot, which means that we could further reduce deaths, further reduce hospitalizations, further reduce bad health outcomes, now he's discouraging people. And he's evading liability by not saying, don't get the flu shot. He's just saying, oh, it's not a big deal. It's not really that effective. I don't do it. I just exercise. I just take these probiotics. I just take my AG1. And so then all of his listeners are like, well, I don't, if he doesn't get it, like, he's a neuroscientist from Stanford. I don't need to get it.
Well, so that's my second part for you, Rebecca, is you cover a lot of these people. You cover a wide range of medical grifters and medical contrarians. And so oftentimes I feel like they know what's right, but they know what sells. And it's almost impossible, it feels like. Do you think, here's my question, do you think it's possible to be that level of famous as a scientist or doctor with a podcast? He's not a medical doctor, but he's a, you know, neuroscientist. Is it possible to reach that level of popularity where you're number 8 in the world and not have these kind of batshit crazy, like contrarian views? Could you be a quote unquote good doctor and be that? Is that possible? Is that, or what do you think?
It's funny you ask that, because I have spent a lot of time thinking about that exact question, especially as somebody with a YouTube channel that I've been at for 15 years. And, you know, I only just passed 100,000 subscribers a few months ago. And, you know, you see what does go viral. And it's not usually the sober analyses of, you know, of science. And I do think that, unfortunately, the system is set up to reward the sociopaths and the crackpots and the people who either have wild ideas that are demonstrably wrong but entertaining, and the people who, on the other hand, don't care and will do whatever they can to get those eyeballs. And, you know, we see the same thing with right-wing grifters in the same spaces. Left-wing, that's not where you make the money, generally speaking, unless you've got an MSNBC gig and are willing to stay quiet about Palestinians. You know, yeah. Left-wing is not exactly making you any money. Yeah. Right-wing is where all the money is. And so if you don't care, then that's where you're going to go. So, yeah, I just don't think I don't think it's possible to. Yeah.
And it's really interesting. I agree. Because so, like, you know, I did a science podcast for 4 years. And, you know, I mean, I bought my own microphone and I do it out of my sad little office that's filled with cat litter boxes. And, you know, there were so many comments. Oh, I love the content, but the sound quality. And I'm like, dude, we refuse every wellness product sponsorship. So we don't have millions to go have a studio and have a producer. We're freaking slapping it together with duct tape, because the public is always like, oh, we love to learn. But there's no infrastructure to actually invest in that. And so the people that are doing credible science communication, we're doing it in our spare time, because we have real jobs in science to pay the bills, because, you know what, money doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
And although we're accused of being pharma-shills all the time, that's not a thing. But who is being a shill are the people that are taking the millions and dollars in sponsorships from unregulated wellness companies. And whether that is supplements or the bullshit home health tests, like the food sensitivity tests and the toxic mold and the over-the-counter urine Lyme disease tests that all the celebrities are taking, or Inside Tracker, you know, and that's also a sponsor of Huberman's.
What's Inside Tracker?
Inside Tracker is a home health test that's going to give you things like, you know, it claims to give you all your metabolic, your you know, apolipoprotein, cholesterol, iron, et cetera. The problem is it's not validated. It's not approved for clinical diagnostic use, but you can go buy one for $300 off their website. And all these people, I've even spoken with very prominent nutrition SciComm people who I got into arguments with, because they literally did not understand how a diagnostic test is validated. And they were like, well, I go to the same lab to get the blood drawn. I'm like, yeah, where does the blood go afterwards? It goes to a validated clinical diagnostic with standards and regulated and approved by the FDA, or it goes to the whack job in the lab that has no GMP facility and they're just giving you whatever the hell's coming out of it. Just because they're claiming to assess the same thing doesn't mean they're actually doing it in the same manner. And so this whole wellness industry, you know, whether it's the cold plunge pools or the home health tests or the, you know, continuous glucose monitors for non-diabetics or the supplements, you know, it's trillions of dollars of global economy every year. And it's the Wild West. It's completely unregulated and anyone can say whatever they want because it's not regulated by the FDA, and they have really limited bandwidth to intervene after they're on the shelves.
The sponsorship thing is such a great point and feeds back into, yeah, who gets popular and who doesn't. And that's one thing that my old podcast started doing, started taking sponsorships, and I would usually bow out of them and just not read them because it made me physically ill.
Yeah.
But then I'd be like, okay, it's for Netflix. Fine. Let's, or Hulu. Let's talk about what's the harm there. But over the years, I've actually become so much more strict about this stuff. I won't accept any. I get offers every day, even for my relatively small YouTube channel, and I just don't respond to any of them. And I'm very lucky in that I have a Patreon that allows me to do the, like, this is my job, you know, but who knows how long it's going to last because I refuse to take these sponsorships. But I've seen, especially over the past 2 years or so, there have been more exposés about how it's not even just, you know, hawking the AG1, like today's sponsor is this pseudoscientific company. But it's also things like big oil sponsoring science influencers to talk about how great propane is.
Yeah.
Or without always being very clear that they are being sponsored for that content. And dietitians being sponsored by Big Sugar is another one that came up recently. It's so insidious because science influencers get this popular following on social media, but they don't have the money. And so it's natural that they're going to be like, oh, okay, this is how it works. I take money from this. And it made me reconsider, you know, there was a time when I did want sponsorships, you know, when I was much smaller. And I remember a friend of mine got a sponsorship from like Jack Daniels or some alcohol company. And I was like, oh, I want in on that. Like, hey, you sponsored my buddy. What about me? And they left me on red. thank God, though, because not, you know, a few years ago, or maybe last year, I made a YouTube video about how, hey, you know, alcohol is poison. Like, there is no a tiny amount is good for your heart or what. That's BS. You know, it's bad for you. I still drink it, but it's bad for you. And it occurred to me, had I taken that sponsorship, would I have been able to make that video? Probably not. And so sponsorships are this really insidious thing that I think it has more control over the kind of information people get on a day-to-day basis than they even realize.
Right. Because now you're kind of, even if it's not, well, you need to put 20 minutes in your cold and flu episode about how AG1 boosts your immune system. It's, you know, well, you know, if you can erode trust in conventional science and evidence-based medicine and coax people over to those things, you know, that's what happens. That's exactly what happens. Now, I will say, if Dr. Elsie's cat litter decides to sponsor me, I would take that because I have 7 cats. I go through probably 80 pounds of cat litter a week. And yeah, it's expensive.
Okay. So
wait. Sorry. I had one more thing.
Yes, but then I have to say something. I had my hand up for
I know you did.
10 minutes.
I know, but if
he's been so light out there, his whole
if
time.
I let you, I just, the if host I could just of the
maybe,
show,
if
say
I could
something.
Maybe say a word in this the show, please. If I could, no, real I'm sorry.
Quick.
I'm sorry.
Real quick, real quick. I swear. You, Andrea, talking about how he doesn't come out and say don't get vaccinated is insidious, but also a win because back when I first started doing this sort of gig 20 years ago, people weren't scared about being labeled anti-vaccine, but it became such a poisonous insult to them that now every single anti-vaccine quack is very quick to say, I'm not anti-vaccine, I'm pro-safe vaccine. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously like BS. But it is also, whenever I hear them say it, I kind of grin a little bit because I'm like,
Small victory. Okay.
I want to talk more about that. I want to get more into some of Huberman and the way he looks at studies. I also want to talk a lot more about, you know, the ethics of doing podcasts and commercials if you're in the medical field, if you're a scientist. But first, because I am a massive hypocrite and sellout myself, we're going to take a quick commercial break to hear from the delightful companies that are sponsoring this podcast. Stay tuned. I recognize the hypocrisy.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ooh, welcome back. I don't know how you guys felt about those commercials, but amazing dick pill commercials.
I only just started taking them last week, and I've already got a little nubbin.
Good job. Good job, yeah, buddy. Same here. Same here. Okay, when we left off, we were talking about the ethics of taking ads and sponsors when you're doing a podcast or a YouTube channel or something in the social media realm, and you're a scientist and or doctor. And I really want to know if there is a way to do it that is both feasible and perhaps ethical. This is something I've thought about a lot. Like, longtime listeners of the show, I'm sure, have noticed that in the last months, there's been ads in the podcast. And that's new. But for the first 4 years or so of doing this, I didn't have any ads. There were a couple of companies or businesses that were interested in sponsoring, but you know, they were medically related. And even if it was something that I like believed in, a product I used or prescribed, it didn't feel right to ethically have them as a sponsor, even if I believed in the product. So, I mean, I had issues with it. I mean, even if it was just like an ad run on the show and I didn't read it, if it was put in there, I also recognize that it seems like I'm endorsing it, even if I don't actually read ad copy, if it's just put in. So it's complicated and it does cause me some, you know, consternation. If I do want to keep doing this show, if I want to keep producing it and paying for it to be out there, I have to find some way to make it work for me. Now, these people out there going to be like, you're a doctor. Why can't you just, you know, accept the cost of doing it?
Pull up your bootstraps.
Pull myself up on my own bootstraps. Mm-hmm. But the truth of it is, it would be nice to be able to have advertisement grow the show a little bit and justify it, at least to my family, why I'm spending the time doing the shit. So, but I'm not going to lie, it was a very tough decision for me. And I don't listen to the commercials, so I actually don't know what they are. I skip through them myself. So I don't actually know. But it would worry me and it would bother me if it was like, I don't know, even BetterHelp, which may, yes, there's a good argument for it, but there's good arguments against it. These things make it hard. And that's the fact that like I struggle with it so much. And I think you guys probably do too in the same setting. I mean, it's another good reason why we cannot grow our shows. I would be happy to do advertisements for like things that were not medical in any way.
Yes. Like, give me a nice pillowcase.
But you could even argue that that's
what's my pillow,
that's hygiene, you know? Yeah. Well, I'm in talks with Lindell. He doesn't go far enough for me is the problem. Mm-hmm. But it's something that really weighs on me. And I don't know what else to do. And people have said, well, why don't you do a Patreon? But that feels weird as a doctor taking money from
asking
listeners,
people,
you know,
for money.
Mm-hmm. And just that to me, I just don't feel
it
like
it feels weird for me, where this is my only job and I exist from other people's pocket change, you know, and it makes me feel bad sometimes.
You're the Salvation Army red bucket.
First of all, right?
I like gay people.
Oh, there you go. That's a win.
Your content, you put out so much great content and it's so important and it's fun to watch. And I've told you this multiple times. I love the stuff you put out there.
Yeah, but you can tell me multiple.
I'm going to again. And it's so important to me that it's out there. The fact that you aren't taking commercials and you aren't doing advertisements for whatever dick pills like I am, like, I think is really fucking great. But at the same time, I want you to be succeeding. I want you to be, I want you to have 1/10 of what Huberman has.
Right. Like, why does he get $20 million in AG1 sponsorships when he's putting out bullshit? Whereas people who are actively trying to improve the world are scraping by through charitable donations of people that, you know, like their content.
It's baked in. And, you know, I'm not here saying that Andrew Huberman is a sociopath because I do not want to be sued. However, there is a stark difference. Like, the reason why the three of us and other people like us do what we do is because we care about other people and we care about things like ethics. Yeah. And there's a reason why people like Huberman and Rogan and Dr. Drew and Dr. Oz do what they do. And it is because, explicitly because, they do not care about those things. When you're talking about the corrections he's made about tiny things, I put out a video last week where I realized after I made it live that I had accidentally said something was basically 100 feet long instead of 1,000 feet long. And I have not slept since. So it would ruin me inside to put out something as riddled with misinformation as what these other men do. But the fact of the matter is that they sleep like the innocent, you know, they sleep very well on their pile of money.
Yeah. And the new organic mattress, that's a sponsor of Huberman.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. No, I mean, you know, I did get a free mattress once from a sponsor like Casper when they first started.
Oh, I have a Casper, but I paid for mine.
Idiot.
Ah, sucker.
Sorry.
It is important to me. I think that we can't exist in a world where we only let the grifters and the right wing, whatever people play by their own set of rules. And we adhere to a set of rules that just nobody else is playing, a game no one else is playing. Right. And because of that, we're not able to compete. We're not able to get out there. And
right, because if you don't have money to go spend, you know, on ad reads, people promoting your show, then you have to rely on word of mouth. And that's not going to, especially if you're talking about nuance, you know, and not black and white definitive statements. Well, that's not going to get you nearly the amount of traffic that if you had $1 million invested in ad promos that are promoting your show everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always been like this, and it always will. And it's because of capitalism. Yeah. When you look at, you know, who's got all of the money to fund this stuff, it's people like the Koch brothers. Why do they have this money? Because they're sociopaths. Yeah. And so they're funding right wing grifters and sociopaths. So, you know, who do we have Mackenzie Scott. What we could do right now is wait for Mackenzie Scott to notice us. Yeah. Because the fact of the matter is that most billionaires are sociopaths. That's how they became billionaires. Yeah. Well, and they don't care about science.
And it's interesting because, you know, I know a lot of the anti-science rhetoric is really kind of far right wing, but there's also a really far left wing anti-science movement. And we know the political spectrum is not a line, it's a circle, and they meet on the radical, you know, fringe, right? And so you have these activist organizations that people believe to be watchdogs, like the Environmental Working Group, which started, you know, from liberal people, but now again, the line is a circle. And so you've got like your liberal granola heads who were really like, you know, oh, well, I don't know the chemical name, I'm scared of that. And now they've converged with the, you know, virulent anti-vaxxers, you know, conspiracy theorists. And that blend is the Huberman fan.
You know, the problem I have is there is an inherent vulnerability to his audience that when you have that, you have to be extra mindful of. There are people who are going for health reasons to listen to a health podcast, and they're the susceptible ones.
Yeah.
So there is a level of responsibility that I think a podcaster like that has to have. He's probably making a shit ton of money. And if he had just maybe 50% more control over some of the supplements and stuff they talked about, that would go a long way, I think. But let's get back to him for a little bit. So let's talk about some of the things that he promotes on his podcast. He talks about studies a lot. And he'll promote studies in the way that makes him sound very
authoritative.
Correct. Thank you. You mentioned in your article that some of the studies he presents are, they sound very interesting. They sound really definitive and they sound really like game changing, but not all studies are created equal, which is something you say. Can you explain a little bit more about what you mean by that and how that applies to Huberman and how he uses it to promote supplements?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when we're doing scientific research, it follows a path of what knowledge we have at that point in time. And we're trying to understand, you know, the observations and the understanding we have thus far, and we want to kind of further that. And so when you're conducting a study, when you're designing a study, there's all these different types of, and, you know, I'll use biological science for, you know, clarity purposes, but of course, you know, research and studies are, you know, in all fields. But when you're doing biological science, right, you have all these different research models that you can use to investigate a particular phenomenon. So say we want to look at a potential compound that could cure cancer, right? It could kill cancer cells in your body. So typically we're going to start with what we call an in vitro study, which are cells on a petri dish or in a 96-well plate more often nowadays. And so you grow them with some, you know, nutrients, sugars, amino acids, all the things that they need to grow and reproduce. And then you, you know, apply those treatments and you look at what happens. Do we kill the cancer cells? Do we not kill the cancer cells? At what dose do we kill the cancer cells? And so on. Once you have some, you know, potential likely candidates, you know, from an in vitro screen, then you move into more complex models, right? Now we maybe grow mini organs in vitro. So now they have scaffolds and they have some more three-dimensional architecture. So now you're mimicking maybe a tissue in the body or maybe a tumor as it would be growing in a body, but it's still not a body. Or you can move further into like an animal where you're injecting them with cells that are going to create a tumor. And then you want to see if your treatment will, you know, cause the tumor to regress, right? And so you can get more information from those. You can look at things like safety. You can look at things like dosing. You could look at things like the time course of it. But again, it's still not what happens in a human. For human, you have to move into clinical trials, right? So all that other stuff is preclinical research. And clinical trials have multiple phases. Phase one is looking at purely safety. Is this thing safe to give to people in its full formulation? And that has to meet certain benchmarks, and you have to have a certain number of people and participants and demographics and diversity. But if it hits that benchmark, then you move on to phase two, which is looking at safety in combination with dosage. So you have a few other dosages, you have a slightly smaller group, you know, slightly larger group than the phase one, and you're looking at some additional endpoints of whatever you're testing. And then your phase three is your really wide scale, comprehensive. We're looking at safety, we're looking at efficacy, we're looking at any adverse outcomes. We want to make sure that, you know, we're catching things that might be rare events and so on and so forth. And when that, you know, and that's kind of the workflow. And so every time a study is completed, though, we typically publish it, because if we don't publish it, the rest of the world in our science sphere doesn't know that it's been conducted. And so they can't use that information to build the next study. So science is incremental and it's always accreting. And we talk about this thing called the scientific consensus. And people have this perception, I think, that it's just some people sitting around a table and are like, yes, we agree. That's not what scientific consensus is. Scientific consensus is, what does the totality of data weighted by the strength of it? So how relevant is it to people, right? So an in vitro study is not going to be as strong as a clinical trial study. So when we weight them all appropriately and we look at the strength and we look at the outcomes, these are the conclusions that we can make. That's the scientific consensus, right?
Yeah.
And what happens is, and this is really common, because people want to feel like they have control of their health. So they'll go onto PubMed and they'll try and find things and they just read the abstracts. And we know abstracts are really a commercial for your publication, because most of them don't actually accurately represent what the data say in the study. But Huberman does the same thing. He'll often just like reference a study, but he's only referencing what's said in the abstract, or he'll pull a study and it's only a petri dish study. And then he uses that to then say, well, this is what's happening in humans. And so he makes these broad claims that have no actual clinical data behind them.
It's a very smart, sexy way to get people's attention. It's the way, like, you'll look at a news headline, it'll read like coconut oil treats Alzheimer's, where in reality, it's like maybe some acid or some component of it, if taken out and studied in the proper way.
Yeah, we put it on some neurons and it,
exactly.
Helps regenerate the myelin sheath.
Many steps away from something that is clinically important. And that's something that people who know how to brand and people who know how to create exciting headlines know how to do very well. That's a really interesting thing that, like, I think smart people who know how to grift a little bit know how to do.
I mean, Huberman knows how to do this. He published
past tense, a lot of animal and in vitro studies once upon a time. So, I mean, he knows the hierarchy of evidence, and it's deliberate. And even if you could make the case, well, oh, maybe he just misinterpreted, like, there was an example where he deliberately misled his listeners in the episode with Robert Lustig. Lustig is going off on his typical tirade about how sugar and ultra processed foods are poison, when ultra processed food has no standard definition. And I've talked about that a lot, but he goes on to say that ultra processed foods inhibit bone growth. And he lists a whole bunch of different bones, right? Long bones and, you know, all the types of bones. And Huberman, like, prompts him. He's like, wow, like, was this in vitro or in vivo? So he's trying to sound like he's skeptical and wants to get to the bottom of it, right? So Lustig goes, in vivo. And Huberman goes, oh, in humans, where did they get all those people in the Middle East? And Lustig goes, in Israel. So I went to that source page from that episode, the show notes, and that paper wasn't there, but I was able to find it by, you know, keywording in PubMed, the Israel UPF bone inhibition. It was in rats. It was in rats. It was in female rats specifically.
But were they in Israel?
So not only, and yeah, technically in vivo can refer to a person because we're in vivo as well, but you wouldn't say that. You would say clinical, right? So, but it's beyond that, because Huberman said, oh, in humans, right? And of course, Lustig's not going to correct him, because that goes to their whole thesis that ultra processed foods are killing everyone. But it was deliberate, right? And you know, his defenders are always, well, he goes back and he's open. He has a comment section and you can give feedback. And I'm like, yeah, you can give positive feedback, but if you actually make any sort of actual evidence-based critique, he ignores you, or he says that he talked to 3 MDs. And so that's sufficient, you know? So this was, and it wasn't like they couldn't listen to that and be like, oh, you made a whoopsie, like, we should edit that out. He's got a team of producers, right? This is polished stuff that he's launching. So this was completely deliberate in order to mislead people and scare them about food, which we have enough fear-mongering about that to begin with.
Let's talk about some of the things he has promoted in terms of supplements there. And I'm just gonna go through a couple of things here. And you just tell me if there's any evidence to your knowledge of them helping humans in any particular way.
Perfect.
So here are some things he's promoted. Alpha GPC. It's supposed to support cognitive function and memory. Not so much. You're shaking your head. Okay. Well, tyrosine, it's an amino acid that plays a role in dopamine production. Has that been proven to help neurological function in humans?
You're getting tyrosine from your diet, you know, supplements.
Okay. He has talked about caffeine, coffee. That's hard to argue, in my opinion. Coffee seems to be, it makes me.
So interestingly, I don't remember which, it might've been the cold and flu episode when he was going off about his weird thing about cortisol and natural killer cells. But he says that he was talking about, you know, when you can consume your caffeine before or after your workout. And if you work out in the morning, oh, it's okay if you drink your coffee beforehand. But he says it gives you energy, and that is false. It makes you alert. It does not give you energy. It has no calories. Calories are what give you energy. And technically it's ATP, but yeah. So, I mean, even, you know, we know that caffeine is a stimulant. It acts on the nervous system to improve alertness, and that can increase things like response time and reaction time and things like that. But it does not give you energy.
How many of these things that he's talked about and promoted are things that he actually gets money from?
most of the ones, especially where he has like name brands. So he used to, I think he was actually like a co-formulator of like Thorne. So they have a whole array of supplements. I don't know if that's still listed on his page. AG1 is the newest one, and he makes a lot of claims about the prebiotic and the probiotic and the immune support and the brain health and the this and that. There's zero clinical evidence for any of that to begin with. He also, him and Robert Lustig were promoting essentially a glorified fiber supplement after they were like vilifying fructose, which is in fruits and vegetables that contain lots of fiber. But that of course was something I think Lustig was selling in that instance. And then he also promotes other things that boost your immune system, like sauna and cold plunges. And as you might expect, those are both sponsors of his as well.
Cold plunges are so popular with the techie
bros.
It's
so popular.
Oh my God.
So popular. He and as predicted, I knew exactly what studies he was going to cite. They're terrible. They actually show nothing that he concluded. He says one of them is a really great study and it has a sample size of 9. So, you know, he knows that that's not a really great study, right? Because he presumably is reasonably intelligent, right? He had a lab, he has published, you know, he speaks with authority.
Oh, he's smart. Yeah, no, he's a smart dude. There's no getting around it. Yeah,
so, you know, this is, you know, absolutely intentional. And, you know, of course, He talked about nasal breathing a lot. And so I looked up a couple of years ago, there was a mouth tape company that sponsored a few of his episodes. So again, there's a financial conflict of interest there.
Did you say a mouth tape company?
Yeah. Don't look it up. So there's a new wellness phenomenon that you literally tape your mouth shut. They call it hostage tape in some
places. They call it dying. It's really great. You wrap your face, completely suffocate yourself.
Yeah. And the whole, and again, they completely mischaracterize. So the problem is like, you know, you look at a Petri dish study and there's some sort of, you're exploring a particular mechanism, right? And usually you're like messing with pathways. So you can be like, okay, well, if I block that protein from functioning, what happens, right? And you compare it to the normal. And so there's all these mechanistic data and it's all like, oh, well, if you mouth breathe, that means your saliva is going to dry out and that's going to harm your microbiome. Again, another buzzword of the day. And you're not going to produce as much nitric oxide, which does XYZ, which again, you produce nitric oxide throughout your whole body and you actually synthesize it from foods, particularly leafy greens. So again, whether or not you're breathing through your nose or your mouth, it's really not going to have a measurable impact on that. But if you say that and you say, oh, it's going to harm your teeth and your microbiome and this, that, and the other, then you just tape your mouth shut and it's all good. Unless you're someone like me who has like, you know, narrow nasal passages and would suffocate. So, yeah, it's not scientifically recommended. There's a faction of like functional dentists and other biohacker people who promote it.
I certainly couldn't do it. My Persian nose was built for beauty, not for function. So... it wouldn't work for me.
But I know that he is leading to some sort of oral microbiome supplement, whether that be a toothpaste or a mouth rinse, because he's really been harping on this oral microbiome recently, where he said on the cold and flu episode that, well, I don't have the science behind it. So again, he's creating this persona, like everything else he presented science-based, but this one, it's just not, it's an anecdote, but he swishes water in his mouth when he first wakes up and then he swallows it because all those bacteria that have been feeding on the food residue and creating plaque, that's all, you know, now it's going to go feed his gut microbiome. And so I guarantee that there's some oral microbiome something coming soon, because then he had his oral health episode and he made a lot of really outlandish and unsubstantiated claims about the oral microbiome there too.
And I will stop and say that there does seem to be some connections between the mouth and the bacteria there the heart and the heart
Absolutely.
And other parts of the body.
Yes.
But I mean, one thing that I think is, and this is the thing I kind of want to close out on. This is important to me is, you know, I think at the end of the day, there's only a couple of ways to maybe do it in a fairly ethical manner, or there might be a little bit more of, there might be a better way to do this.
You're still trying to get that bag ethically, aren't you? Got to get that bag. But but the thing is that there's a couple of key points to it. And one, you have to be transparent about what is known and what is not known. And you cannot sell things as if they are known when they are clearly not. And even in a subtle way, which I think it sounds like he's pretty good at doing, you have to be absolutely transparent. You have to admit what level of scientific evidence there is and the difference between different forms of scientific evidence. And you have to help communicate that to the audience, especially the limitations of what we know so far and the existing evidence. Now, that's very not sexy. And that
is a
terrible way to sell something. But it's the only way I think we can do it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and the other thing is that I would say the vast majority of people do not realize that the entire dietary supplement industry is unregulated, right? So it falls under the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994. And this was started in probably the 70s under the guise of medical freedom. And it was really also, it also It led to the anti-vaccine movement as
bore
well.
The fruit that is the anti-vaccine movement.
Yes, exactly. Yes. That's exactly. Yeah.
The stinky fruit. The stinky. The stinkiest fruit. You can Dorian. It was whatever the stinkiest fruit is.
Yeah, but they're delicious.
Papaya. Papaya smells like feet to me. Anything that is outside of what is considered food, they're not regulated for safety or efficacy before they're allowed to be sold, you know, on the shelves. And while there are some that are probably very safe, like most teas, it doesn't mean that they can't be adulterated or contaminated. But the problem is that the FDA can only step in after the fact if there is, you know, demonstrated evidence of harm. And the problem is that most people don't know that you can report adverse events related to supplements to Health and Human Services. And so, you know, a lot of those things just don't ever get reported. People just, you know, ignore it, right? And so there's a perception because, of course, they use the appeal to nature fallacy. And they're like, well, it's all natural. It's herbal. It's this, it's that. And people don't realize that, you know, there's no standards on formulation chemistry. There's no standards on bioavailability or what actual chemical structure that particular supplement is in. You could buy the same exact vitamin C from one company and one lot could be, you know, bioavailable and at a certain dose, and one lot could be completely opposite, contaminated and all that, because there's no quality control. There's no regulatory oversight. And so not only are you promoting things that don't have evidence to support them, they can be harmful, right? And so, you know, if you're a scientist and you're trying to promote this as a science forward discussion, you know, the fact that you're deliberately misleading people, and also supplements can't make medical claims. They can't say that it's going to cure or treat or whatever. Yeah. But the problem is, again, because they're unregulated, they do that, right? They do it all the time, right? Balance of Nature. It's all over MSNBC, just like
they have disclaimers on the bottle that says the FDA does not approve it for this.
Yeah, a lot of them actually do it anyway. Like there's a one that I was looking up yesterday called 38 Terra, and on their website, they say that they can heal leaky gut, which isn't even a medical condition. So now you're promoting pseudoscience diagnoses, and you're saying your supplement can treat it, right? And so there's so much kind of just flouting of the law, even though there's a rule, because there's no infrastructure to actually enforce it. And so they're paying copious money to these people because they want to get it in the hands of their consumers before an actual regulatory agency, which unfortunately do not move as fast as I would like, can step in.
Sure.
I want to mention that back in 2017, the FDA actually reversed their older policy of only going after these supplements when they would get a complaint. And they specifically said that they were going to start looking at these supplements and homeopathy and other alt med stuff in order of how potentially risky it might be. But that said, they don't have the budget.
They don't have the resources.
Fantastic.
Everything's
great. We have a great system.
But it was deliberately taken out of their hands by politicians who wanted to have free reign and do this. And actually there's legislation right now. I spoke with a senator's aide last week They're trying to legitimize homeopathy now. So, and that's a bipartisan effort, I will say.
They've always been trying to do that. And it's been a constant fight on the part of skeptics and doctors to stop them from doing it. Because homeopathy is one of the most dangerous products on the shelves. And that's a whole other conversation.
Before we get to Huberman level lengths of podcasts, I'm going to have to shut this one down. But tell me your point.
One more thing. Yes. I think it's beyond just they're selling, you know, this thing that is not beneficial and could be harmful. You know, it's the fact that many of his listeners, they're, as you said, they're going to him because they have a health problem or they're struggling or they're feeling vulnerable. And now they're going to go try this thing instead of seeking medical care. And that is a very, very underemphasized harm.
Right.
Which was the first question Kaveh asked. And so it only took us 90 minutes to get there, but we did it.
All right. Go team. All right. Yes. Let me get plugs in for both of you. First, Andrea, what can we plug for you?
You can find me on Instagram and Threads at dr.andrealove. I've recently started using Twitter because someone with a really large following shared my story in a very complimentary manner. I think that's dr_andrealove. And then my website is immunologic.org and my newsletter is immunologic.substack.com.
And Rebecca, what can we plug for you?
Same as always. It's my name, Rebecca Watson, on YouTube, or you can go to skepchick, skepchick.org, at Rebecca Watson on all of the places, all of the social media places, or actually Rebecca Watson on the
Instagram.
Meta-branded things where I just wasn't quick enough on the trigger and somebody else got my goddamn name.
I can't believe there's another Rebecca Watson out there. That's so
How
wild.
Dare she?
There's Andrea Love. She's a very voluptuous black gospel singer. So
I get a Google alert and sometimes Rebecca Watson's die and I feel like this surge of
dark
power.
Soon I will be the only
one.
Okay, well, I am on TikTok now because my process of selling out is nearly complete. And I even did one of those top five reasons this happens.
About gastroenterology? Though?
Yeah, it's GI related stuff.
That.
Yeah,
I
no,
love...
it's well, I'm a terrible, terrible person.
I had
person.
A chronic anal fissure surgery a few years back, so I have a very soft spot.
Hey,
thank you.
Nice.
But I have a soft spot.
Is it still soft?
Have a soft spot? Have you had that looked at?
It's healing up now, but for all of the GI stuff.
Well, follow me there. Thank you to Jason Rosenbaum, Dr. Jason Rosenbaum, for ad copy. He's the guy who works with the companies like Ben & Jerry's. And if you haven't already, please rate and review us at iTunes. I really enjoy reading those reviews, and I'll likely share them. Thank you both so much. That was super informative. And if you've made it this far in the episode, you should keep listening to my episodes and download the rest of them too. Okay, bye.
Bye.
This podcast is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please consult a physician or other qualified healthcare provider for your specific healthcare needs or concerns. The opinions expressed on this podcast do not represent the opinions of our employees. Details in the podcast have been changed so that patient identification is not possible. And I'm alive and I want to stay. For the first time I'm on my way. And I'm ready for the world. I'm ready for the girl. I'm ready to say. And I'm alive and I want to stay. For the first time I'm on my way. And I'm ready for the world. I'm ready to burn this fire within. Let's begin.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.